Tonight's shiur is a Yahrzeit shiur for my daughter, Abby, who continues to be an inspiration for learning and personal growth and an inspiration to others as well. The title of the shiur tonight is A Child Versus the Gadol Hador, and the topic is related to Pesach. I thought it was appropriate because in leaving Purim, we start preparing for Pesach, and I came across a beautiful idea that I thought was very appropriate as a Yahrzeit shiur a couple of months ago, and I just kept it inside, and I saved it for this shiur, for this Yahrzeit shiur. And with that, let's begin the shiur. Let's start the shiur. The shiur starts with Pasuk Aleph, Shmos Parak Beis, Pasuk Aleph. It says, Vayelach ish mi beis Levi, vayikach es bas Levi. A man went from the house of Levi, and he took the daughter of Levi. Now the question, there are a lot of questions on this pasuk. It's a very ambiguous pasuk. But one of the most obvious questions is, Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, where was he going to? Where exactly was this person, this anonymous person in the pasuk, where was he going to? And this question is actually taken up by the Mefarshim, and they all quote this Gemara in Maseches Sota, which brings a story in order to explain how to understand Vayelech ish mi beis Levi. So we're going to understand the story. I'm going to read through the story first in Sota, and then we're going to break it down and analyze each concept and extract all the insights from each concept. The Gemara is Maseches Sota, Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and it's source number 2. Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, leheichan halach. A man went from the house of Levi. Where did he go? Amar Rav Yehuda bar Zvina, shehalach ba'atzas bito. He went in the advice of his daughter. So whoever this anonymous person is, the idea of Vayelech means that he followed in the advice of his daughter. Now, what is the story? Tana, it was taught. Amram Gadol Hador Haya. Amram was the Gadol Hador. Amram, who was the father of Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam, was the leader of the generation. Kevan Shegazar Paro Harasha Kol Abein Hayilod Hayora Tashlichu. Amar Lashav Anu Amilin. Once he saw that Paro decreed that every male child that was Jewish people be thrown into the river, he said, Amar Lashav Anu Amilin, that we're toiling for nothing. So what did he do? Amad Vegirishes Ishto. He got up and he divorced his wife. Amdu Kulon Vegirshus Nishosen. And everybody followed and they also divorced their wives. Now his daughter comes in and tries to convince him to get back with his wife. Amrlo Bito, who was Yocheved, his daughter Miriam said, Abba, Kasha Gzeirascha Yoser Mishal Paro. Father, your Gzeira, your decree, is harsher than Paro's decree. Sheparo lo Gazar El Al Zacharim, Ve'ata Gazarta Al Zacharim Ve'al Nekevos. Paro's Gzeira, his decree to kill every male child by throwing them into the river, is not as harsh as your decree, because your decree is on both males and females, which we're going to explain. Paro lo gazar elo ba'olam hazeh, ve'ata ba'olam hazeh, ulo olam haba. Paro's gzera is limited to this world, but your gzera, Amram's gzera, is worse. It's harsher. Why? Because it extends to this world and the next world. Paro harasha safek miskayemes gzeraso safek ena miskayemes. And the third argument that Miriam makes is that Paro, who is an evil person, it's doubtful whether his decrees will be fulfilled. Ata tzadik bevadai shegzeroscha miskayemes. But you are a tzadik, and your decrees will definitely be fulfilled. Shenamar v'sigzar omar v'yakom wach. It says in Eov that one of the virtues of being a tzadik is that if you make a decree, it will be fulfilled. Now what happens? Amad v'hichzeres ishto. He got up and he brought his wife back and he got remarried. Amdu kulon v'chziras neshosein, and everybody in Klal Yisrael followed him, and they all got remarried to their wives. And then the Gemara finishes off with another point. Vayikach. It says vayikach in the pasuk. Vayachzor mi bayle. It should say vayachzor. It shouldn't say that he took her for the first time, but it should say that he returned her. So Amar of Yehuda bar Zvina, Rav Yehuda bar Zvina said she'asalo maas elikuchen. So he made a new wedding ceremony. Hoshiva ba'apiryon ve'aron o'miryon merakt in lefanel. She was brought in a bed that the kala was normally brought in, and Aaron and Miriam were dancing in front of her. Umalachi asharis amru im habanim smecha. And the malachim were saying that the mother and children are happy. So in summarizing this medrash in Gemara Sota, I would say that there's really three parts. The first part is that Amram decides to get divorced for some reason, which we're going to explain. Then Miriam, his daughter, makes three compelling arguments, and she convinces him to get remarried. And the end of the Gemara says that this ceremony, this bringing back Yocheved, it wasn't just returning her, but it was almost like a new ceremony. So I really want to focus this year on trying to understand each of these three components. And I want to understand on a deeper level what the nature of the argument between Amram and Miriam is. Why did Miriam require, you know, three arguments? And how do we understand this debate between Amram, who is the Gadol Hador, and his daughter Miriam in terms of marriage and in terms of, you know, having children in Klal Yisrael? So that's really what I want to focus this year on tonight. And the way that I'm going to go about defining it is I want to analyze each argument on their own and each part of the Medrash on its own. And as I said before in the beginning of this year, I think with each idea, with each concept, there is a beautiful insight that we can extrapolate. If we look at number one, which is the beginning of the Medrash, it's source number three on the source sheets. It says, Tana, Amram Gadol Hador Haya, Kevan Shegazar Para Harasha, Kol Abin Hayilod Hayor Tashlichuhu, Amar Lashav Anu Amilin. So Amram was the Gadol Hador. Now, why is that significant? I think this is the first point that we can extract. If you look at number four in Rashi, Rashi says, Gadol Hador Haya, V'hayu Akol Nishmoin Lidvarav. Everybody listened to what he said and to what he did, apparently. So why is this significant? Apparently, Amram, when he was making the decision to get divorced from Yocheved because of Paro's harsh decree, he understood, being that he was the Gadol Hador, he understood that people would follow him. So we shouldn't think that Amram's decision to get divorced was a personal decision. It was a decision where he understood and he knew that Klal Yisrael would follow suit. And I think that's the significance of the Rashi. He says, Amram Gadol Hador Haya, that Amram understood his role, and he understood that by him divorcing Yocheved, people would follow him, and that's what happened. But what is his argument? What's the nature of Amram's argument? And if we go back to the argument, he says, Omar, Lashav Anu Amelin, if we go in number three, line two, he says, we're toiling for nothing. Amad V'girish Es Ishto, Amdu Kulan V'girshu Es Nishosan. If we look at the words of Amram's argument, they're very specific words. It says, Lashav Anu Amelin, that we're working, we're toiling for nothing. So it's a funny type of lashon. What does it mean that we're toiling for nothing? How does that explain Amram's reasoning as to why, you know, it's better to get divorced and Klal Yisrael not have any more children? So I remember that in the Haggadah, there's a similar term. When we are doresh in the Haggadah, the psukim in Magid, we say that Vayar Hashem es onyenu ve'es amalenu ve'es lachatzenu, that Hashem saw our affliction and he saw our toil and he saw the pressure. And if we look at number five, what exactly is going on with Amalenu? It says, Ve'es Amalenu, our toil, Elu Habanim, these are the boys. Kimash Ne'amar, Kol Abin Hayilod, Hayora Tashlichu, V'chol Abas Techayon. And the Haggadah quotes the same pasuk in our Medrash, that Paro's decree was that every male son be thrown into the river and thus be killed. So how does the Haggadah know that Amalenu, when it says Amalenu in the pasuk, that it's referring to the children? How does it know that? So that's an interesting idea that the Mefarshim, the Rishonim, take up. And this is going to be the first point of the shir. If you look at number six, the first Rishon is Rashi, and he says, V'esa malenu elu habanim, shem omel ha'adam, umase yadav. A person's children, here it's used for boys, but it's really the children, are the omel ha'adam, they're the toil of man, and they're the work of his hands. And the Archos Chaim also, who's, I think, another Rishon, he says a similar idea. If you look to the left of Rashi, he says, Ve'esa malenu elu habanim, klomar shehem omel ha'adam, shetzivo la'abdam. They are the work and the toil of man, and Paro had decreed to destroy them. Shehayegil la'reik nikra omel. If when a person works for nothing, it's called toil. Ve'alkein hevi zeha pasuk. And that's why this pasuk is brought in. So what exactly are the Rishonim saying on this idea of Amalenu? How do we know that when we say Amalenu in the Pasuk, it's a reference to children? I think they're saying a very deep idea. The idea is that when a person has a child, they put all their energy or most of their energy, more energy than anything else, into the child, into raising the child. And that's what it means, Amel Adam Umase Yadav. Why? Because a person views the child as a product of their own ability to create, more so than anything else in the universe. And as an example, I mean, let's say a person builds a house, and they put all their energy into designing the house and constructing it in the proper fashion. And then let's say it gets destroyed by, for example, a hurricane, like Hurricane Sandy. So when a person puts all their energy into something and it gets taken away, it's just devastating psychologically to the person. And the chiddush that the Rishonim are saying is that the most devastation occurs when a child dies because of the fact that a person puts all their energy, the most amount of energy, constructive and creative energy, into the child. And when the child dies and it's taken away, it's just devastating. It's completely devastating. And apparently, it's even a bigger chiddush that even if the child, because these children were very young, Kapara was killing them as they were born. Even when the child is born, even though you don't actively raise the child, as soon as a child is born, the chiddush is that a person immediately puts all their energy into the child. They have expectations. They have fantasies. What's the child going to be like? What are they going to look like? You know, that's an immediate reaction to having a child. And apparently the argument or the idea is amalin, or a toil. The biggest toil is when we put all our energy into something like a child and it's taken away. Now we can understand, I think, Amram's argument in a deeper manner. What is Amram saying? Amram is arguing that it's too devastating for Klal Yisrael to experience consistently the loss of their boys. And he, as the role, as the Gadol Ador, and his role, his role is to protect Klal Yisrael and to allow them to survive. And in his witnessing of the children being killed by Paro, his argument is that we should avoid this devastation, because this devastation is just too painful for Klal Yisrael, especially being that Klal Yisrael are in such a devastating situation as is. It says Vayar Hashem es onyenu ves amalinu ves lachatzinu. They're enslaved, you know, they're getting beaten, they're getting killed. And now for Klal Yisrael to witness this and to experience the loss of their boys is just too devastating on a psychological and mental level for all of Klal Yisrael, and it'll destroy Klal Yisrael. It'll lead them to complete obliteration on a psychological plane. So that is the argument of Amram, which I think is a good argument. And I think the words, as I said, Lashav Anu Amelin, the words of Lashav Anu Amelin, really point us to the nature of the argument. And the nature of the argument is the idea of Amel, the idea that when a person has a child, they immediately attach all this energy to the child, and when that's taken away, that's what creates the devastation. So his argument is a very powerful argument. So the question is, how does Miriam, who I believe was 7 at the time, this little girl, how is she able to convince the Gadol Hador, Amram, her father, to get remarried to Yocheved, and also for all of Klal Yisrael to get remarried as a result of Amram getting remarried? How does she do that? What are the nature of her arguments? So before we analyze each argument, it's interesting to note that she has 3 arguments, and I think there's a significance to the 3 arguments, and when we go through the arguments, there's a consistency to the arguments, and it fits into this idea. So let's keep this idea of why 3, which I'm about to explain, keep it in the back of our minds, and it'll work with each argument. The Gemara right before this Gemara explains that there were 3 gzeros of Paro. That Paro, he didn't just decree that the boys be killed, but he did it in 3 different steps. If we look at number 7, it's the same daf in the Gemara, daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. It says, "V'amar Rav Yosi Rav Chanina Shalosh Gzeros Gazar." There were 3 gzeros that Paro was gozer. "Betchila im ben hu v'hamiten oso." If it's a boy, then kill it, kill him. And if you look at number 8 in Rashi, the first Rashi, "Betchila v'hamiten oso lo hoshiv shomrim elasamach al hamiyaldos." In the beginning, Paro relied on the midwives to take care of this, to kill the male children of the Jews. That was his first degree. "V'livisof," and the second degree, "kol abein hayilod hayor tashlichu." And if you look in Rashi, number 8, the second line, "Tashlichu shehoshiv shomrim v'ksudrin ledavar." Then he appointed officers in order to ensure that the Jewish boys were being killed. And then in the end, v'levesof alf al amo gazar. Even on his own nation, he was gozer. Even the Mitzrayim had to kill their boys. there's a pattern to the decrees. The decrees seem to be getting harsher and harsher. At first, Paro allows the midwives to take care of it. Then the decree gets harsher and he appoints Shomrim. And then finally, the last decree, which shows a complete expansion of Paro's power, is that he's gozer on his own am. And actually, I didn't mention this, but the Maharsha points this out as well. So this is not my observation, but the Maharsha points out that there's a correlation between Miriam's arguments and the three gzeros of Paro. I'd like to understand what that correlation is. Why is that significant? Okay, now we have to go through each argument of Miriam. And as I said, I think the arguments of Miriam have to be extremely deep arguments in order to be convincing and compelling for the Gadol Ador to change his mind. And I believe that each one is compelling on its own right. So if we look in number 9, I'm going to break down each argument and try to give an idea and explain what each argument is. Number 9, Abba, Kasha gzeraschla yoser mishal Paro. So Miriam's first argument is that your gzera is harsher than Paro's gzera. Sheparo lo gazar ela al zecharim, ve'ata gazarta al zecharim ve'al nekevos. Paro was only gozer on the boys, and you're being gozer on the boys and the girls. What does that mean? Look in Rashi, al zecharim ve'al nekevos in number 10. Shelo yolidu lo zachar ve'lo nekeva. By Amram getting divorced and all of Klal Yisrael getting divorced, They won't just not have boys, but they won't have boys or girls. Whereas Paro's decree is only on the boys, Amram is not allowing the existence of both boys and girls. And that's the first argument of Miriam. But with every machlokes, the debaters, they have to address, you know, the main issues. And the main issue that Amram has is that he needs to protect Klal Yisrael from the devastation of seeing the boys being killed. So how is Miriam countering Amram's argument with this argument? Miriam must understand Amram's argument. She must accept the fact that if Klal Yisrael witnessed the destruction and the death of their boys, it will be very harmful to Klal Yisrael. And she must have a counter argument in the same fashion, and it has to fit into the idea that the Medrash is saying. So what is that argument? How will we explain that argument? So this is where I really want to start giving a theme in this year. I think the nature of Miriam's argument, as I said before, is very deep. She's saying that it's true, she agrees with Amram, that Klal Yisrael will experience complete devastation if they witness the death of their boys. But on the other hand, what Amram is doing is that he's removing an opportunity, an ability of Klal Yisrael to see a way out, to have some hope. And I think that that's the idea that Miriam's expressing in the first argument. You see, even if the boys are killed by Paro, at least girls will be born, and there will be some ability of Klal Yisrael to have hope, to have some type of vision of the future. And I think Miriam's argument is a clear one, that on the one hand, you're taking away potential pain for Klal Yisrael, but on the other hand, you're also taking away hope for Klal Yisrael. Miriam's saying maybe it's better that Klal Yisrael experience the devastation of seeing their boys being killed, but also be able to see some type of vision of the future by having girls than to avoid that. And I think that's the nature of the first argument of Miriam. Now, I think a question that could be raised is, what kind of future is that? If you just have women, what kind of future can you have for Klal Yisrael with just women? But I think there's an answer to that question, and I think the answer is in the idea that we all are aware of, that in Judaism, we believe in a concept of matrilineage, which is the idea that a person's yahadus runs through the mother, runs through the woman. And if you look in source number 11, the Gemara in Kiddushin says, "Valada kimosa minolan." How do we know that a Jewess who has a child, it's like her, meaning religiously it's a Jew? Amar of Yochanan mishum Rav Shimon ben Yochai, de Amar kra ki yasiras ben chom acharai. It says, when he takes your son away from me. It's talking about a Jewish woman who is married to a non-Jewish male, and if the Jewish male takes the son away from God, bincha haba mi Yisraelis kari bincha ve'in bincha haba min ha'ovet esko chavim kari bincha el bina. A child that comes from a female Jewess is called your child, but a child that comes from a non-Jewish woman is not called. Ovet esko chavim, a non-Jewish woman is not called a Jew. It's El Bina, it's her child. So we see from there that there's an idea of matrilineage, that Yahadus goes through the woman, And it's even a concept before Matan Torah. If we look at number 12, the Ramban, he on the Mekalel, he says, V'kal v'chomer adavar, im lo'achar Matan Torah, she'akusi haba albas Avraham, mechai ve'lavin, ve'ein lo ba kidushin, hi mikva tahora le'umos l'hachshiras v'lada li'os kemoha. So if after Matan Torah, where it's aser for a Jewish woman to have relations with a non-Jewish male, we still say that the child that comes about is Jewish, lo kol shekein kodem haTorah shetehei mitaharas valada lios kamoa lechayvo b'mila kizaro shel Avram b'yem echlal b'nei Yisrael, shouldn't we say even more so before Matan Torah, where there is no real iser, technical iser, for a Jewish to be with a non-Jew, or not as many Isurim, that it should be like her? So we see from the Ramban that even before Matan Torah, even in Mitzrayim, there's a concept of matrilineage. There's a concept that the Jewish identity occurs or comes through the woman. And I think the basic idea behind that is that a woman is really the foundation, provides the foundation of the values, of Jewish values in the child from a very young age. And I think that's the philosophical concept that explains it. But the general idea that Miriam's expressing to Amram is that even if there's a limited vision of the future, it's better with pain to offer Klal Yisrael a vision of the future in order for them to cope with their situation than to take that away. And I think that's the nature of the first argument of Miriam. Okay, anybody have any questions? Or okay, good. So that's argument number one. I think argument number two is a little bit harder to understand, but there's a deeper idea, number two, in argument number two. If we look at number 13, it says, Paro lo gazar elo ba'olam hazeh, ve'ata ba'olam hazeh u la'olam haba. Paro was only gozer in this world, and you are gozer in this world and the next world. What does that mean? Rashi explains in number 14, Elo ba'olam hazeh, shenoladim umesim, v'chozer mechayin hein la'olam haba. The children that are born, the boys that are born, they'll be killed by Paro, by Paro's people, but then they'll exist in Olam Haba. Ata gezarta ba'olam hazeh uva olam haba, shekevan she'enam noladim, enan ba'in la'olam haba. You, Amram, you're being gozer in this world and the next world because the children that aren't born will not exist, will not just not exist in this world, but also the next world. Now, the strange thing about this Rashi that needs to be explained is, how is Miriam saying that Amram's depriving an unborn child of being born? I mean, the child doesn't exist. So you can't, I don't believe that you can deprive a non-existence of existence. So what kind of argument, and what does it mean that it's kasha, that it's harsher than Paro's gzera in this sense? In what sense is it harsher? Is it really harsh for the non-existent child? Who is it harsher for? So I think those are strong questions to ask. But I think, as I said before, I think there's a deeper idea here. And I want to use an example to open up this idea. The example is a hesped. When you go to a hesped of a person who died, you typically what's talked about is what the person did in this world. You talk about how the person was, you know, was a mensch, and the person, you know, he used to give tzedakah and he learned, and what he did for the shul and the community. You talk about what he did in Olam Hazeh. But by a child, there's actually halacha, ein maspidim esaketanim. There's halacha that there is no hesped by a child. And I think one of the reasons why there's no hesped by a child as opposed to an adult is that by a child, when a person thinks of a child who dies, they don't think of their existence primarily in Olam Hazeh because it's limited in Olam Hazeh. You have a limited amount of memories, and the child, you can't say that the child really, you know, learned as much as an adult, for example, or helped the shul out as much as an adult. But really the focus of a child's existence when a child dies is Olam Haba, and less so Olam Hazeh. It's both. It's really Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Now, how does that fit into the argument of Miriam? How can we explain the argument of Miriam? See, Miriam is being consistent in her arguments. And her first argument is that you have to offer Klal Yisrael hope and not take it away from them, even with devastation. But maybe the second argument, as Paro's decree is getting harsher, and it's more inevitable that the boys will be killed because they're shomrim now, they're guards, maybe her argument is that even with the death of children, there is a focus of energy on Olam Haba. Because when you witness a child's death, it automatically focuses a person's mind on existence in this world and the next world, more so than in an adult, as I pointed out by the hesped case, the hesped situation. So the chiddush that Miriam's saying is that even with devastation of children inevitably dying, there is a focus on Olam Haba, and a focus on Olam Haba is an opportunity for Klal Yisrael to see an existence beyond their existence, which is also hopeful for Klal Yisrael. Because the worst thing is when a group of people or a person are in a situation where they feel like there's nothing else other than this. When you feel like there's nothing else other than this, you really want to crumble and you want to just give up. But Miriam is saying that even with the devastation of a children dying and it being inevitable, there is a focus on another existence, the existence of Olam Haba, which is an existence, an eternal existence of the good. And even that would help Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim cope with their situation because it gives them an escape. It gives them something that they can think about that exists beyond the present situation. So Miriam, she's being consistent, as I said before, and she's going step by step in her argument. Her first argument is that you need to give Klal Yisrael an opportunity to see a future. And even if it's a limited future through just the existence of women, Nekevos, even that is better than taking that away from them. And her second argument is that by allowing the boys to be killed, by having that happen, it also gives Klal Yisrael a sense of hope because it shows them that an existence of Olam Haba, it's there. And it gives them the opportunity to focus their energy and their minds on that existence. And even that gives them a hope and an ability to cope with their situation. And I think there's a significant difference between watching, as I said before, watching the boys being killed and watching an adult being killed. Even if they're being beaten and being killed, it's different. The impact of a child's death is different in terms of, you know, focusing a person's energy on Olam Haba and giving them that ability to escape through Olam Haba. Now, the third idea, I think, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a consistent pattern of giving Klal Yisrael hope or an escape. The third idea is also a strange idea on a pshat level. If we look at number 15, it says, Paro harasha, safek miskayemes kzeiraso, safek ina miskayemes. By Paro, who's an evil person, it's doubtful. Maybe his decrees will be fulfilled. Maybe they won't be fulfilled. Ata tzadik, but you are a tzadik. Bevadai shekzeirascha miskayemes, sheneemar v'sigzar omer v'yakom lach. You're a tzaddik, definitely your decrees will be fulfilled. As it says in Eov, that when a tzaddik makes a decree, and he says it, it will be fulfilled. What kind of strange idea is this, that whatever a tzaddik says, it will be fulfilled? It sounds to me like a very supernatural idea, and I want to just understand it so that and try to make sense of this idea, this concept. And I like using an example. So I used an example for the last idea. I want to use another example over here. And the example that I'm going to use is two parents. So if you have two parents and one of them is harsher than the other parent, and one of them's, you know, a little bit of a pushover, the other one's harsher, and the child does something that deserves punishment, and the pushover says, go to your room. Now, when the pushover says, go to your room, the child thinks, the pushover said it, and I'm going to stay in my room, but he thinks, maybe I can get out of this. Maybe I can convince the pushover parent to let me out. But then let's say the harsher parent comes home and says, stay in your room. Then all of a sudden the child starts thinking, you know, this is serious and there's no way for me to get out of this. I can't get out of this situation and I'm not going to escape. Now I want to use that example and plug it in over here by Miriam. And I think the idea that a tzaddik, whatever he says comes true, whatever his decrees are, you know, are fulfilled, is an idea in the perception of people. When people see a tzaddik and they view a tzaddik, especially Klal Yisrael, when they view a tzaddik, they view the tzaddik as having a certain authority. And the reason why they view him as having a certain authority is because of the level of the tzaddik, and because a lot of times a tzaddik is viewed almost as a shaliach Hashem, as a representation of God to the other people, to other nations, to Klal Yisrael. And when a tzaddik says something, it's viewed as having a certain authority and it has a certain impact on the people. But when a Rasha says something, even to Klal Yisrael, even if the Rasha has great power, there's always a part of Klal Yisrael that doubts the Rasha's authority. Now, Miriam's argument now is similar to our arguments before. The argument is that by Amram getting divorced from Yocheved, he's really endorsing Paro. He's the tzaddik, and the people view him in a certain way. They view him as having a certain authority, but they don't view Paro as having the same level of authority. But now by Amram getting divorced from his wife, he's basically giving that authority, the authority that the people perceive Amram has, he's giving it to Paro. Now, why is that terrible? For the same exact reason. Because when you're in a tragic situation, as the people Am Yisrael are in a tragic situation, and the person who has decreed this harshness on them is viewed as having an absolute authority, that is the worst situation to be in. Because you feel like there's no way out. I can't get out of this. And that's what causes Klal Yisrael to be unable to cope with their situation. But Miriam is showing Amram for the third reason, and I said, it's consistent with Paro's decrees, because Paro's now expanding his authority, and he's even being gozer on his own people. So Miriam is saying, you can't give in to that authority. You can't allow the people to view Paro as having the endorsement of the tzaddik. And by Amram divorcing his wife and separating from his wife, he's doing that. And he's also removing an opportunity of Klal Yisrael, an ability of Klal Yisrael to cope with their situation. So those, I think, are the arguments that Miriam's making. Very beautiful, compelling arguments. And she ends up convincing Amram. And Amram actually listens to her. If we go to the end of the Gemara in number 16, it says, Omad v'hechziris ishto, that Amram got up and he brought his wife back. Amdu kulon v'chziris nishosein, everybody followed suit. It says, Vayikach v'yachzor mibayle. It says Vayikach in the Pasuk. It should say that he brought her back. Amar of Yehuda bar Zvina she'asalo ma'aseh likuchen. He says that there was a new wedding that happened. It wasn't just returning his old bride, but it was a new experience. Hoshiva be'apiryon ve'aron and Miriam rakton lefanel. She was brought back in this kala's bed, and Aaron and Miriam were dancing. Umalachi asharis amru, they said, em habanem smecha. They said that the mother and the children are rejoicing. Now, how do we explain this idea, the end of the medrash? How do we explain this concept? Why did there have to be a new ma'aseh likuchen, a new act of ceremony? So I think based on the concept that were expressed earlier in this year, I think it fits in beautifully. Because when a person gets married, initially, if their objective is to have children, they're doing it to do pru'ervu, to fulfill pru'ervu, the commandment of God. But now, when Amram got back together with Yocheved, having children had a new meaning, it had a new expression. And the idea of having children now had also an additional component of allowing and letting Klal Yisrael survive and cope with their situation of Abdus and Mitzrayim. So the idea of a new ceremony is to express that there is a new type of marriage occurring, a new type of purpose occurring. The purpose of their marriage now was different. It wasn't just to have children in order to fulfill Puravu, but now it was to have children also to help Klal Yisrael survive and exist. And he was functioning in the capacity of Gadol Hador, and he was actually protecting Klal Yisrael by instructing them to have more children by him getting back with Yocheved, by him getting back together with Yocheved. So I just want to summarize the Medrash. I don't know if every idea, came out clearly, but I just want to summarize the Medrash. We have Amram's argument. Amram's argument is a very deep, compelling argument that Klal Yisrael, from a psychological standpoint, they won't be able to handle, especially being in the environment of Mitzrayim, they won't be able to handle witnessing consistently the death of their boys. Because you put all your energy into your children, and to see it, to see it fail and to see it being taken away is just too devastating. But Miriam makes three arguments to Amram to try to convince him to get back with Yocheved. And all the arguments focus on the idea that even though Miriam recognized the pain that it would cause for Klal Yisrael to have boys and watch them being killed by Paro, but there's also an opportunity of hope in these situations. And she's showing three ideas or three concepts of hope that exists in that situation. One concept is by having the kevos, by having females, you're allowing Klal Yisrael to see a future, even if it's a limited future. And the second idea is by allowing the children to die, you're focusing Klal Yisrael's energy on Olam Haba. And Olam Haba is an opportunity for Klal Yisrael to see an existence beyond their own and allow them to cope with their situation. And the last idea she's expressing is that it's the role of the perception of the people of Amram, of the Gadol Hador, is that he has a certain authority, and by him divorcing his wife, he's legitimizing Paro's authority in the eyes of the people. And that's terrible, and that doesn't allow, it takes away an avenue, once again, of Klal Yisrael's ability to hope and to see some way out of their situation. And finally, at the end of the Medrash, it says, Vayikach, now Yocheved and Amram, they get back together, but they don't just get back together as they were before. They get back together with a renewed purpose, a renewed idea of having children, which is to save Klal Yisrael, to allow them to cope with their situation in Mitzrayim and allow them to go on and to persist in order to leave Mitzrayim and eventually receive the Torah. So now I think that explains the whole, you know, the whole flow of the Medrash. There's one idea also at the end about Miriam. We see here that Miriam, who is very young, I think she was 7 at the time, she's willing to stand up to her father. And if we look back in the Psukim, I think most people are familiar with number 17. It says, "Vayomer melech Mitzrayim la miyaldos ha'ivriyos asher shem ha'achas shifra v'shem ha'shenes pua." So the midwives who were responsible for killing the Jewish males, their names were Shifra and Pua. And there's a lot of midrashim as to why, you know, who Shifra and Pua were. But one of them is based on this Agadata in the Gemara, says in number 18, it's in Shmos Rabbah, it says, "Hevi Pua shofi upon him keneged avia." Why was Miriam called Pua? Because she was able to be hofi upon him keneged avia. What does that mean? If we look at number 19, I think it's the Eitz Yosef on the Medrash Rabbah, he says, "Pua shofia panel lashon galoy." It means that she revealed. "Me'inyan kel nekamos hofia ki galso ve'iza panel kenegdo." She revealed her face against him. "Velo bosha mimena." She wasn't embarrassed. "Lechasos panel." And she didn't cover her face. So we see that one of the perfections of Miriam is that she was able to face her father, who is the Gadol Hador, because she saw this as a fatal flaw and a fatal mistake for Klal Yisrael, but she was able to stand up to him. And that's why the Medrash says she's called Pua. Pua is reflecting a perfection, a characteristic that Miriam had in her ability to not shy away from her father, but fight for what she believed was true and would save Klal Yisrael. And it's amazing that a little girl, a 7-year-old girl, was able to do that. She was able to present, you know, these arguments in such a compelling, you know, logical fashion, and she was able to convince her father and basically save Klal Yisrael in allowing them and giving them the ability to cope with their situation. And I don't think it's an accident that Miriam had this capability. We see this capability a little bit earlier in the Psukim by the Mialdos itself. And I didn't send out the sheet, but this is just an additional idea about Miriam. On the same pasuk that the midwives were named Shifra and Pua, the other pshat is in Rashi. He says, "Why was her name Pua? Zu Miriam Shepoa umedaberes v'hoga lavolad kedera chanashim hamafaisos tino kabocha." So Pua, who was one of the Mialdos, which was Miriam, Rashi is saying, what was her job? Her job was to calm down the babies. And the babies would cry, and she would coo to them, and she would try to calm them down. Pua lashon sa'aka. It means like yelling, but it also means cooing. Kimo kiyolda efe. So we see that Miriam, that was her job. And if you look at number 21, there's a machlokas. In number 21, Tosfos brings down Rabbeinu Chananel, who says, but it's not that big of a machlokas, it's a similar idea. It says, Shehaisa pua lavlad, Pirish Rabbeinu Chananel locheshes lechisha. She would recite an incantation, or I think that's what it means, or she would whisper, but she would say something to the females, just like it's done nowadays in the ear of the females who are giving birth. So Rabbeinu Chananel is saying that Pua was almost like the doula. She would stand by the Jewish woman and she would whisper or she would recite things in the Jewish woman's ear in order to allow her to have the children. So what do we see about Miriam's personality? From a very young age, her personality was that she was very in tune with the psychological nature of people. And I think the significance of Miriam calming down the child was that she understood that the women were very afraid because of the decree of Paro. The decree of Paro was very harsh, and the women were very fearful of having children with these midwives. And Miriam was trying to allow the mother to create a bond, a strong bond with the child immediately as possible, and she wanted to reassure the mother that way. So she calmed down the child. She calmed down the child in order to allow and facilitate a strong bond between mother and child, because she recognized that its importance in terms of its psychological importance in terms of the child's survival and the mother's survival in Klal Yisrael. And the other idea is that she helped the females, but that she didn't help them in a physical manner. She helped them in a psychological manner. She also calmed down the females, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, because she recognizes their fear and that it's dangerous in terms of having children, and she's able to calm them down and to recite in their ear and to whisper to them and to allow them to feel calm. So we see earlier that Miriam is very cognizant of psychology, and she's very cognizant of the mentality and the mental state of Klal Yisrael and how to soothe them. And we see it in one more instance. One more example of Miriam's astuteness in the area of psychology is by Moshe Rabbeinu. After Moshe Rabbeinu is born, it says that I have source number 22. It says, "Vatesatzav achloso mirachok ledeyal ma yaselo." After he's put into the river, Miriam is waiting there. And if we go further on in the psukim, it says, "Vatomer achloso." Obviously, Bas Paro picks up Moshe, and then it says, "Vatomer achloso al Bas Paro ha'ilech the karasi loch ishami nakes mina evrios vesenik loch esayolid." So Miriam's idea is that she's going to go find a Jewish wet nurse in order to nurse Moshe, and she asks Bas Paro if she should get her, and it says, "Vatomer lo Bas Paro lechi vatelech alma vatekras ema yalid." She sends her away, and Miriam goes to get Yocheved in order to nurse Moshe, and it says in test, "Vatomer lo Bas Paro helichi asayalid azev v'hiniki uliv ani atenes charech vatikach aisha yalid vatenikeu." And if Rashi over there mentions why was it significant that Moshe be nursed by a Jewish woman, Rashi says, "Mina ivrios milamed shehechzi raso al mitrios harbe liyanek v'lo yanak lefi shehaya asid ledaber im hashchina." Because in the future Moshe would be on a very high level and he would be speaking to God So it would be inappropriate for him to nurse with a non-Jew. But Miriam, I think, understood what that meant. I think what that meant is that the process of nursing is not just a physical and physiological need, but it's also a psychological idea. It creates a strong bond, you know, the strongest bond possible between a child and the mother, the nurse. Apparently, Miriam understood, she had a nevuah according to the Midrashim, but she understood what Moshe's role was going to be, and she understood the value and the power of nursing in terms of shaping Moshe's future. So once again, we see that Miriam, at a young age, was very in tune with the psychological various psychological significance of nursing, and also calming down the children and calming down the mothers and giving birth. So we see her astuteness, and I think that's another idea in her name being Pua. And it also reflects back on the Medrash that I mentioned before, because it shows you where she's coming from. It shows you that Miriam understood the people. She understood how the mind worked, and she understood, you know, how to protect the people in a psychological manner. Okay, so that's really tonight's shir. And as I said before, the reason why I gave this shir is as a Yahrzeit shir for my daughter. I especially thought that the second argument of Miriam was a very unique, you know, counterintuitive idea, but it's a very unique idea. To say that even, and to recognize that even in the death of a child, that there is an idea of hope, because it focuses the people of Klal Yisrael's minds and a person's mind on the existence of Olam Haba, which allows a person to feel a certain ability to escape their situation if it's tragic. I thought that was just a very compelling, beautiful idea, and it's something that I think just stuck to me, and I had to express it, you know, in memory of my daughter. So that's really tonight's shir, and it's a preparation for Pesach, so we understand on a deeper level this medrash and what the people were going through, and that's pretty much it for tonight. So I want to wish everybody a good Shabbos, and we'll get back to Parsha next week. Does anybody have any questions on the shir? Any questions?